Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And can we just get a little bit of a round of applause, please? Yeah, for the audience. Yeah, there we go. That's right. We have a new microphone. We have a new soundboard. I mean, we are upgrading the podcast here and there, working on getting guests. We just had the great Dane DuPaul on. As much as I was dealing with some technical difficulties with that, we're learning new software to record on. I mean, the Surprise Jab podcast continues to evolve. So we're going to learn what all of these buttons do on the soundboard. I mean, this one is yell, so someone should just yell like, yeah. Right now, I don't know, but this is a fun episode. I have so much planned for this. I was hoping to record this, gosh, Friday. I'm recording this Sunday, September 1st, and it's just been so busy. I've just been so busy, and I don't even realize I'm busy until I'm actually in it. But on today's episode, we're going to be looking at some new UFC news, of course, recapping Dana White's Contender Series, seeing what new signees Dana White decided to give a contract. We have another verdict Q&A for you. We're going to answer some real or fake questions posed by ESPN's MMA team. We're going to be kind of looking at our UFC champion predictions for year's end as the final 4 months is now upon us. Also going to be reviewing the movies The Bike Riders, starring Tom Hardy, and Long Legs, starring Nicolas Cage. That's going to be fun. Of course, top 10 new things in pop culture. And to end the episode, we will be recapping Bash in Berlin, a good WWE PLE that I actually watched yesterday. So, a lot of fun stuff. Let's get right on into it, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, let me see what this one does. Awkward. That one was awkward. I cannot wait to hear these sound effects when I listen back to it. But so, my first week at college for my senior year is officially down. I was able to hit all of my classes. So here are some of my thoughts on all of them. First off, I should probably see what the names of my classes officially are, because, I mean, actually, I don't know all the official names. I just know the exact spot and what we're going to be kind of learning in it. So, all right, first off, Introduction to MIS. It is a Management 300 level course. It is online. I actually have it with my buddy Jaden. I didn't even realize that, but it's asynchronous, meaning we don't even have Zooms or anything. And, you know, it's all right. I took a quiz. I read about the history of computers and the internet. So it's going to be a very technical course. I can kind of get the vibe on. But it's an online course. There's not much interaction there. So, I mean, there's just nothing much there to even go over. I also have another online class. It is a political 100 level writing intensive course called Thinking About Politics. It seems very interesting. The professor, I think his name is Jeffrey or Jeremy or something, seems like a very cool guy. I don't know if I can get the book though online or if I have to get it in person. So that's something I have to discover this week, as I already have a writing discussion due this upcoming, I think Wednesday it is or something, so definitely got to get on that. But then I do have 3 in-person classes, which I very much have enjoyed so far, all 3 of them. First off, we got Integrated Marketing Communications, that is Marketing 318. I have a plethora of friends in that class, and I mean, I was plugging Marketing Club, you know, oh my gosh, trying to get Marketing Club together. That has been such a struggle. It's tough being the president. It's tough being El Presidente. Let me tell you, it is no easy feat. But if I can't run a club, how will I run a company? That's my motto I've been going by. But yeah, Marketing 318, Integrated Marketing Communications. We kind of were talking about advertisements and successful ones and unsuccessful ones in class. But I mean, I literally sit by all my friends. So I have fun in that class. Another one, Marketing Research and Analysis. I thought it was analytics, but I guess it's analysis. It's a Marketing 300 level course. You know, I got it with one of my buddies, Garrett. I know a couple of other people in the class. And, you know, it's kind of tough. It's at 9:30 on a Monday. The professor seems like a great guy. Had a very low rate my professor score, though, which was very perplexing. But just seems like a run-of-the-mill guy, you know. Just goes over things, talks about on the board. Was talking about statistics and stuff. So, I mean, is it the most exciting stuff? No, but what I've been trying to do in every class is to sit there and realize, okay, why would they offer this class for people if there's nothing to be learned? So there's always something to be learned. You just have to find it yourself. And then my final one, which I have on Wednesdays and Fridays, my only Friday class, Marketing 341 Supply Chain Management. Dude, my professor, Professor Yen, oh, what's his name? Chai Yu Men or Chen Pai Yen Chumai? I don't know. Super cool guy. He's from Taiwan. Legit is probably going to be in the running for one of my favorite professors of all time. I can already tell. And I met my group mates. One of them's from Cambodia. One of them is from Japan. Very fun. And I sit next to Garrett in that class. So always having my buddies in classes is always fun. And, you know, it was actually not until this first week I realized actually how many people I know in the College of Business, even just in college in general. Like, we're just walking and I'm just seeing people. I'm going, hi, hi, hi. And then someone's telling me, like, gosh, I hate walking with you, Zach, because you always just talk to everyone. And I was like, well, you know, now that you mention it, maybe I've made more connections here than I even realized. But first year, under my first year starting now, first week of my final year under my belt, and I just have a feeling is going to be an amazing year. And something else that I just have a feeling is going to be amazing is the current UFC slate of things. So, of course, we are now in the final 4 months of the year. Sound effect. I have no idea. It was 9277. Dude, I have got to learn these. I apologize if anyone's hearing this and going, what are these weird noises? But we're having a little fun with the soundboard. But yeah, we've had a bunch of UFC fight announcements going down. And I mean, we haven't really talked about fights in the last week or so. So here we are. Let me hit you with all the new fights that have been announced by the UFC. First off, we got a little ranked action coming at you to UFC Tampa. Tampa, Florida. Getting the card December 14th. Tracy Cortez, 11-2, 5-1 in the UFC. Ranked number 12 coming off her loss to Rose Namajunas. Is back against the woman she was originally supposed to fight on July 20th. That being Miranda Maverick. Miranda is unranked, 7-3 in the UFC. It's crazy. She's had 10 UFC fights in 3 years. That's pretty impressive, if you ask me, averaging 3.3 every year. So this should be a fun one. Toss-up. Tracy Cortez, of course, is known for her looks. Miranda Maverick is known for her cool last name. That's how I'm going about it. Another fight announced for you. UFC 308 going down on the prelims October 26th at the Etihad Arena, Abu Dhabi. Mataykabek Ortolbay, who is 13-1, 2-0 in the UFC, takes on the 19-2, 3-1 in the UFC, Matus Rebecki. These two guys are absolute killers. It's a shame they have to fight. This would make a great fight night main event in the future. And maybe they'll meet again, but I mean, Matus Rebecki, 19-2 record. His only loss is to Diego Ferreira. As for Mataykabek Ortolbay, he has come in and he's beaten Uros Medic and Elvis Brenner. I mean, dude is coming from Kyrgyzstan. That's a fun fight. That's a fight that I'm going to tune in to definitely check out. Another one coming at you, UFC Vegas 99 on October 19th, as Brad Superman Katona does not get the homecoming he was hoping for in, Edmonton, as he'll be fighting on the Apex against Gene Matsumoto, who is 15-0, 1-0 in the UFC with a win over Dan Argueta. I have no idea who this guy is. Gene Matsumoto, 15-0 from Brazil. I'll have to keep him on my radar. How old is this kid? This kid is 25 years old, turns 25 September 19th. Wow. Or 9th, my bad. Jeez, very exciting. And here's probably the biggest one. Of all the fights that were announced right now, this is the biggest one. It's going down, UFC 309, Madison Square Garden. Gotta be on the main card, I would think. So November 16th, Nikita Krylov, the number 7th ranked light heavyweight in the world, returns from the front lines of battle in Ukraine. That's right, this man is from Ukraine. He's been fighting in the war against Russia. And I legit think the UFC matchmaker should be investigated, because he takes on the number 11th ranked, 14-0, undefeated, 4-0 the UFC, Russian Asamov Mirzakhanov. I mean, we have an actual battle between Ukraine and Russia in the UFC octagon. This should be illegal or something. And this fight is so tough to tell. Let me tell you, Nikita Krylov got wins over Alexander Gustafsson, Johnny Walker, Volkan Ozdemir. This dude is just, he's in his prime right now. Right? He's in his prime, but he's also taking on a guy, Asamov Mirzakhanov, 4-0 in the UFC. Three of them knockouts, coming off a nasty one over Alonzo Menifield. This dude's a killer, and I mean, like I said, 14-0, this is going to be a banger. Excited for that one. Another fight coming at you, UFC Vegas 98, going down October 12th. October is just the month for frickin' Apex events, I feel. Jonathan Pierce, 14-6 professionally, 5-3 in the UFC, takes on the 18-5, 5-2 in the UFC, Pat Sabatini. I mean, I'm surprised these two haven't fought. These are two staples of the unranked featherweights in the UFC. Gosh, that's a toss-up. I might run with Jonathan Pierce, though. We'll have to see. Another fight that has been announced, this one for UFC Edmonton. That's right, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. November 2nd, coming at you from the Rogers Place. They still haven't come to Minnesota, but they're going to Canada all the time. Proper Mike Mallett, 10-2. professionally at 3-1 in the UFC. Takes on Trevin Giles, who is 7-6 in the UFC. Oddly, Trevin Giles has wins over Ryan Spann, Roman Dolidze, and Brendan Allen. That is just mind-boggling to me. As for Mike Mallett, he was perfect. He was, 10-1 on a 7-8 fight win streak, and then with under 20 seconds left, got TKO'd by Neil Magny in front of his home nation of Canada. So Mike Mallett has lost all of his hype. He's looking to get it back. Should be a fun fight. Another fight for you. UFC Paris in Paris, France, September 28th. Bolaji Oki, the Zulu warrior, who was 9-1, coming at you from Belgium, won his UFC debut over Timmy Kwamba, I believe it was, takes on Chris the Problem Duncan. Chris Duncan, 2-1 in the UFC, 11-2 professionally, wins over Charlie Campbell and Yanal Ashmaz. This is going to be fun. That's a fun fight for you. On the prelims, I would presume, when it comes to that, we'll have to see. But Bolaji Oki had an interesting debut, wasn't the most dominant, looked better on the contender series. And Chris Duncan, dude, that guy's definitely turned his career around after getting knocked out his first time on the contender series. And finally, the final important fight, I will say for you, this one for UFC Edmonton, I can presume it's going to be on the main card, as Amin Zahabi, who is 11-2 professionally, 5-2 in the UFC, he hails from Canada. He takes on the Brazilian Pedro Munhoz, who is 20-8 professionally, 10-8 in the UFC. This would be a fun one. Pedro Munhoz recently booted from the rankings with a loss to Kyler Phillips. So this is kind of retribution, I would say, for him looking to get back into the win column. Won't be so easy. I mean, Amin Zahabi, the Ariel Helwani lookalike, has just been looking fantastic so far. So we'll see what happens, but those are all your new UFC fights. Other than that, we don't really have too many new locations. We're going to Edmonton, we're going to Tampa, we're going to China. Lots of fun stuff coming at you in the later half of the year. And something else that has been going on, if no one has known, I think we should hit a little applause right now. A little applause for the UFC. Just amazing fights every Tuesday with Dana White's Contender Series. Love me a little Dana White's Contender Series. We recently had our third episode, and we got some new signings to the UFC. So let's check it out and see who Dana White was like, hey, you're good enough to join the UFC. So here's a little contract for you. First off, all right, we kicked off a little flyweight matchup between Nick Pacini and Jack Duffy. And Nick Pacini won this one by split decision. And then in a very odd turn of things, Dana White was pretty much like, I do not think that the right winner won, which is super awkward. I think it was this fight. There were multiple fights on here where it went the distance, and we were kind of like, oh, what is Dana White thinking here? And he basically kind of mentioned that he did not think Nick Pacini won. And when we go to the totals from this fight, Nick Pacini, 32 significant strikes. He had 6 takedowns, 6 of 16 takedowns for 8.5 minutes. Meanwhile, you get Jack Duffy, 76 significant strikes, 125 total strikes. So this was a battle of, who's the better striker versus grappler. And Dana White was pretty much, I can't honestly remember if he gave the contract away. We should actually revisit that right now, because we only had 2 finishes on this card, so I know for a fact that those 2 guys got contracts. But I know for a fact 3 guys got contracts, so I should actually revisit. And then he said about, he did not give a contract to Nick Pacini and Jack Duffy. And it's already coming back to me, guys. Here, this is why I need to review things more in my head. So this fight was so close. Dana White said they should run it back on the final episode. I believe it's October 1st. I think it's my birthday is the final episode of this season for Dana White's Contender Series. So that's what they're doing. Nick Pacini, Jack Duffy will be rematching for a chance to get into the UFC. I knew it would come to me. But then we got the best performance of the entire night. The best performance of the entire night in our second fight of the night, as Malcolm Wellmaker has one of the most beautiful knockouts of Adam Bromhall. Malcolm Wellmaker now 8-0 in the UFC, and just put him out. He hit him with a straight punch, a straight right, and straight up knocked him out cold. I mean, he slumped him in the middle of the octagon, and when it came to Dana White announcing who is going to be getting a contract, he said, Malcolm, do I need to say more? That's what you do on Day with Contender. So Malcolm Wellmaker, welcome to the UFC, the bantamweight. And I mean, this kid is only 20 years old, 20 years old, getting this done. Actually, he's 30. Malcolm Wellmaker is 30. I for some reason, associate 1994 with being 20 years old. Shows you how much I actually pay attention. Adam Bromholm, now 13-3, and he's been finished in all of those losses. So, Adam, you'll not be joining the UFC, but the machine, Malcolm Wellmaker, welcome. Bring that knockout power with you to bantamweight. We love you. After that, we head to the men's middleweight division as Marco Tulio took on Mathieu Duclos. Mathieu Duclos coming from the Netherlands. Marco Tulio actually trains at the same gym as Charles Oliveira. That's right, the former lightweight champion. So you knew he was going to be very, very talented. Huh? What's this one? Guys, I really got to learn this
one. I love it. You guys are so great.
Soundboard, having some fun. But Marco Tulio, dominant in this one. There's a reason that shoot boxing out in Brazil has produced so many excellent fighters. Marco Tulio probably going to be added into the mix as he moves to 12-1 with a spinning back kick to the body in round number two to finish this one off. And look, he dropped him in round one with a punch, dropped him in round two with a kick to the gut. He had him just running everywhere. 52 significant strikes to 30. I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh, I got a lisp now. That's what happens when I'm trying to go over Mathieu Duclos. Yeah, 6-3 from the Netherlands. You're causing me to get a lisp. Get out of here. Marco Tulio, you're going to be amazing in the UFC. Co-main event was so good. One of the best fights in Dana White's Contender Series history as Bogdan Grodd, who was knocked out last time on, was given one more chance, and he comes on and he takes on Michael as well. And this was an absolute freaking war. Now this one was tricky, okay, because Michael Aswell landed far more strikes, 155 significant strikes to 102, 184 total strikes to 105, all right? Bogdan Grodd, 3 of 7 on takedowns, minute and a half of control time, so not much there. Damage-wise, it did go to Bogdan Grodd, okay, and this was a split decision, 30-27, 29-28, then a 29-28 for Michael Aswell. And Bogdan Grodd obviously earned this, was an absolute dog in this fight, just landed some heavy shots. And Dana White was so impressed with both of them. Bogdan Grodd, because he got the win, was given a contract, but he said to Michael Aswell that whenever a featherweight or lightweight pulls out of a fight, he is going to be the first person that gets a call. So keep the name Michael Aswell on your radar in the next 4 months when any form of fighter in that featherweight to lightweight weight category pulls out of a fight. You may be hearing his name, and he's an absolute striking legend. Bogdan Grodd, you know, very talented in this. I don't know what his ceiling is. Okay, I don't know what his ceiling is. And as I look at a lot of these guys, I know I think Marco Tulio has what it takes in the UFC. I think Malcolm Wellmaker can develop into someone, but, you know, he's 30. You know, maybe a bit past his prime. And, you know, Nick Pacini and Jack Duffy, you know, it's tough with some of these names, Terror Series guys. You can tell when they're going to be good and when they might be iffy. And as we get to our main event, here's one where I feel like they should be good. Another one in the middleweight division as the Russian Andrei Puliev, who 9-2 record, was taking on Liam Anderson, who now falls to 6-3. And he just dominated him. 30-27. You could even throw out some 10-8s. Andrei Puliev, anywhere the fight went, he just had his number. 98 significant strikes to 45. 137 total strikes to 63. Wolfman landed a takedown. Liam Anderson, 6 minutes control time. Andrei Puliev, 2 minutes, 40 seconds. Andrei outstruck him every single round, you know, really went on the grappling realm in round number three. Good fight. Andrei, he was dominant enough for Dana White to give him a contract, so we'll give a round of applause to all of them who got a contract. Andrei should be talented in the UFC. You can tell the striking is there. You can tell it all just comes together. So that's what you have there, folks. 4 contracts given out, a rematch taking place on the final episode of the season. And you know what else you have? You got yourself a guy in Michael Aswell who's going to be making a short notice appearance sooner before later. So a lot of fun stuff coming at you from Dana White's Contender Series. It's always a great time. Tune in next Tuesday. We can talk about it. And a great platform for you to talk about things with would be on Verdict MMA, the hottest MMA app in the industry. Of course, as always, I always pose a little question for you. on the app for the Q&A, and all the people answer me. They always give me a great answer. I love the community. They always are supporting me and stuff, going like, hey, I listened to the episode, man, really good. Love Verdict MMA. I thought it was called Verdict MMA, but we ask a Q&A to them, and this week I posed the question, what is your favorite MMA quote from a fighter of all time? And we got some fun responses, so we're going to go over them here and give some of our thoughts. Alrighty, let's get right into it. First off, Ange. Andrew has a purple belt, first stripe. If you didn't know, you basically make predictions on all forms of MMA fights. Sometimes they do like the special boxing fights with, you know, Francis Ngannou, Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury. They do every single UFC event, every single PFL event, never really Bellator or anything. Damon's Contender Series, they do a lot of fun stuff. And Ange said, no man that beats off the cartoons is going to beat me. Never gets old. And fun fact, Sean Strickland said that, and Sean Strickland beat Adesanya. So there's something to be said about Sean Strickland's trash talk game. And, you know, as much as I'm not the biggest fan of Sean Strickland, you know, he's just very controversial, speaks his mind. And, you know, there's something about being controversial and speaking your mind, like, you know, like not just being slapped down by the industry. And but then it comes around to, you know, he's just being blatantly, you know, racist or sexist. It's kind of comical to see. And but it's more so his fighting style. His fighting style is kind of meh. But that fighting style was able to beat Israel Adesanya. So that should speak a bit to that, to him. But that quote, super funny. And I honestly agree. No man that jerks off the cartoons should beat me in a fight. But you do have to be scared of some of those anime people. Next up, Jay's 2006, My Balls Was Hot, of course, said by Derek Lewis after knocking out Alexander. Actually, was it the Alexander Volkov knockout? I honestly can't remember which one it was, but, you know, Joe Rogan came up, why'd you take your pants off? And he said, my balls was hot. There have been so many legendary Derek Lewis quotes. He's just one of my favorite fighters. He's coming at you. Another matchup. Excited to see it. Who is he taking on? Hanata Dinez, I think it is. Gosh, they're just feeding guys to Derek Lewis now, and he keeps eating them alive. My balls was hot. Never gets old. LC Cody 789 said, Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck. The bad guy. Chill, son. And one of the most famous call-outs of all time. I think it might be the most famous call-out of all time. Of course, Chael Sonnen wins his fight, and I honestly cannot remember if this was before or after he had lost Anderson Silva, but he wins his fight. Anderson Silva is in the audience, and he cuts this little promo and ends it with, Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck. It was awesome. It wasn't, you know, as much as people can say it was corny, it didn't even feel corny at the time. It was Chael Sonnen saying it, one of my favorite middleweights of all time, one of the best analysts in the game, and yeah, I can definitely get behind this one. Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck. Three-piece Anasota said, my fave is the Connor quote, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize to absolutely effing nobody. One of the, oh gosh, I was saying, you know, call-outs, Chael Sonnen had that one, but this is probably the most popular, now that I'm thinking about it. I mean, you had Tory Lanez sampling this in a song, absolutely amazing song, by the way. And when Conor McGregor said this, you know, he'd just beaten Eddie Alvarez, truly, that was his prime night. 2016, UFC 205, that was prime Conor McGregor, right there for you. And he finishes him, he's like, where's my belt, gives him a second belt, I'd like to take this chance to absolutely apologize to absolutely nobody, the double champ does what the hell he wants, yeah. It was awesome. It was legendary. This might be my favorite quote, too. Thank you for that three-piece Minnesota. That one was good. The Right Hook said, he's reaching for those grapes. He's trying to make his wine, and the wine is already sounding like a violin with that cheese and wine. Tito Ortiz. All right, let's break that down. He's reaching for those grapes. He's trying to make his wine, and the wine is already sounding like a violin with that cheese and wine. Look, Tito Ortiz, definition of having a little brain damage up there. Him and Chuck Liddell knocked each other one too many times in the head. That's a comical quote, but I'm going to be honest, the Right Hook, I do not understand the meaning of it. I would probably need to know the context of it. I wish I could pull up clips. I'd probably get copyrighted for it. But you know what? Seems like a good quote if we were to able to understand the context, that is. Oliver Sub said, your wife is in me DMs. Holy cow, that one was insane when I saw that. And you know, we've all been that Conor McGregor. When you lose, when you're a sore loser, and you're just throwing off the most wild complaints to your friends, or most wild things you're saying to them. And, you know, he snaps his foot, Dustin Poirier wins the fight, he's walking away from the cage, and he's yelling, "Your wife is in my DMs." And funny enough, she was in his DMs, okay? She was talking trash to him before the fight. So Conor McGregor, one of the only fighters where a fighter's wife would actually be in his DMs. Just, oh my gosh. Conor McGregor's had just, him and Derek Lewis, some of the best quotes, and Chael Sonnen. There's a select few who have multiple amazing quotes where you're like, yeah, they're good at getting clicks. Punch Drunk Casuals, "Hey, I'm not surprised, mother truckers." That's right, Nate Diaz beating Conor McGregor, and they asked him, "How do you feel?" And he says, "I ain't surprised, mofos." Yeah, I that is confidence right there. That's cockiness. He said he'd beat Conor McGregor. He went out there and submitted Conor McGregor. One of the most entertaining two-round fights that I've ever seen. Nate Diaz, you absolute legend. Reppin' Stockton. Don't really know what he's doing with his life right now. I mean, I'm not trying to sound mean. Like, I just don't know what he's doing. You know, he's boxing Jorge Masvidal, which he got a win there. But other than that, I think his MMA days may be over. I'll welcome him back to the UFC. But as for quotes, Nate Diaz up there with the greats. Mount Rushmore, there you go. Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, Chael Sonnen, and Derek Lewis for post-fight quotes. Fun times with all of the boys. And another fun thing that I always like to keep on my radar, gosh, what should I put here? Slash? I don't know. Wow, it made a slash sound interesting. But something I like to keep on my radar is whenever ESPN puts out articles or whatever, and they pose amazing questions. They pose thought-provoking questions. And I figured I would answer some. This one is MMA real or not? MMA real or not, so I'll hit everyone with a real or not for the question posed and give my thoughts. I don't know how many of these there are. Doesn't look like there's too many. This article came out August 26th, so not that old. First off, MMA real or not, both champions will leave their belts at Noche UFC. Of course, UFC Noche is UFC 306 going out the Sphere September 14th. And as much as I don't like to drop predictions beforehand, you know, if you do listen to this episode and my predictions episode coming at you in 2 weeks, which we might actually have a special guest for that episode, not going to spoil anything just yet. But I could definitely see, and I probably am going to predict, both champions leave. Sean O'Malley and Alexa Grasso retaining. I just think Alexa Grasso is Valentina Shevchenko's kryptonite. For some reason, I think she is her kryptonite. And it also comes down to the fact that neither of these women have been very active. I mean, let's go back all the way to March of 2023. All right, we are now going to be in September of 2024. They have fought each other twice. They have fought each other twice in two freaking years. So, I mean, it has been a long time coming for someone else to shake up the division. I'm just hoping win or lose, whoever wins this, we get Manon Fiorot in there for a title shot, mix it up. Winner of Aaron Blanchfield and Rose Namajunas can fight. But yeah, I think Alexa Grasso walks out of this one. And usually, you know, I've seen them on The Ultimate Fighter. Alexa Grasso, you know, she seemed more calm and collected. So we're right with Alexa Grasso. And as for Sean O'Malley, at the end of the day, I think it comes down to, can Sean O'Malley defend the takedowns from Merab? I think he can. And can Merab withstand the power of Sean O'Malley? I don't think people understand how actually talented Sean O'Malley's striking is. Like, it is world-class, maybe the best in the UFC, and people underestimate it all the time. They underappreciate it. So, round of applause. Round of applause to Sean O'Malley. There you go, my man. I mean, look at what he did to Aljamain Sterling. He pieced up Marlon Vera for 5 rounds. I mean, they're talking about, oh, Davison Figueiredo was the first man to drop Sean O'Malley. Yeah, that was after Sean O'Malley pretty much knocked all the sense out of Marlon Vera's head. So I think both champions walk out with their belts. Now, will they walk out of their next defense with the belts? That's yet to be seen, especially for Sean O'Malley taking on Umar. But I do think both of the champions leave UFC Noche with their belts. Real or not, Conor McGregor will fight before the end of 2024. I'm going to say not. I'm going to say not real. Not real in the slightest, because we go through the schedule. He can't even get booked until December, and December's already filled up. December 21st is the latest date you could have an event. And as we look at the December calendar, you got the 7th, the 14th, and the 21st. The 14th, we're in Tampa. I'm pretty sure the 7th is going to be UFC 310. And I mean, the 21st, I doubt they do another pay-per-view. 28th, they're not going to do an event. And so I just don't even know. Does Conor McGregor have an opponent? Like, hire him and Michael Chandler even side? Are they going to do him versus Conor McGregor? Like, I mean, are they going to do Charles Oliveira versus Conor McGregor, I mean? And I just do not see it happening. And honestly, I would be okay if Conor McGregor never came back. I'm just being honest. You know, I know the casuals are all like, oh, I just want to see McGregor. But as someone who's actually gotten excited for UFC 303, someone who planned episode 100 of the Surprise Chef podcast around it, and then he pulls out, we've lost all sympathy for him. He's out there cheating on his wife. He's doing drugs. And he's just, he made his money. You know, he bought himself a super yacht. He has the billions from the whiskey business. I just, when I look at fighters, you know, I look at him when he was in his young age, 2014, you know, he was hungry. He's achieved everything he's needed to, you know, he's mid-30s now. And I always like to look at guys like, I mean, who's a good example I can give someone who's hungry right now? Armin Sarukian. You know, Armin Sarukian is someone right now who has worked his way from the bottom up after losing to Islam Makhachev, after being hit with some bad split decisions. And he's a guy I want to get behind in the lightweight division. And he's hungry. He's determined. He's dedicated to winning the belts. Same thing goes for a lot of guys in every division. Tom Aspinall, for example, trying to chase John Jones. You know, there's a lot better storylines out there than Conor McGregor making his triumphant return. Mind you, we had a 2018 McGregor return, a 2020 McGregor return, a 2021 McGregor return. We were supposed to have one the last three freaking years, never get one. I don't think Conor McGregor will fight again. Real or not, Raul Rosas Jr. is the best young prospect under age 25 fighting in September. That is so specific. I mean, I don't even know what to do with that information, if I'm being honest. That is so specific. I actually kind of like that. But Raul Rosas Jr., amazing, amazing talent. He's it's tough. It's tough because he's 20. You know, he's about as young as you can go. Actually, he might be. Is he even 20? Is he 19 still? I think he finally turned 20. But when we look at September, all right, we're getting three events, unless they're shocking me with one, the 28th. Oh my gosh, we're in Paris. So we're getting spoiled here. Oh, there's not an event the 21st. We don't have a UFC event the 21st. Why is that? Is there something going down September 21st? Interesting. I did not even realize that. So no UFC the 21st. We do have events at the Apex on the 7th, the Sphere on the 14th, and Paris on the 28th. So let's go through the UFC Vegas 97. As I browse through the card, Isaac Dalgarian, Andre Lima, they're both young prospects. Trevor Peak, so no one there. Raul Rosas Jr., easily the best prospect under 25 on this UFC 306 card. And as for Paris, I mean, I don't know the specific ages of guys, but yeah, easily. As I look at the schedule, easily Raul Rosas Jr. is the best prospect under 25 fighting in September. That is just so specific. Thank you, UFC, but interesting. Raul Rosas Jr., big fight coming up with Algonquin, and I think he gets the win there. Yeah, we're definitely going to be riding with him in that matchup. Which Bellator fight are you most looking forward to in September? Well, that is just not related. How is this even in the same article? We're just going to skip over that. Real or not, Gilbert Burns, Sean Brady is the best non-pay-per-view fight in September. That one's tough because Nazem Imavov and Brendan Allen at UFC Paris has all my interest in the world. Same for Benoit Saint-Denis and Hamlet Kahn. So I'm going to say not real. I don't think Gilbert Burns and Sean Brady is the best non-pay-per-view fight in September. Sean Brady's coming off win over Calvin Gastelum. Before that, he lost to Bilal Muhammad. Gilbert Burns just got knocked out by JDM, Jack Del Maddalena, earlier this year, actually, in pretty dominant fashion, a little comeback win. I don't know what we're going to get here at the Apex. Gilbert Burns has not fought at the Apex in a fat minute. I'm thinking back to his Kamaru Usman title shot days. And Sean Brady is just so untested, man. Calvin Gastelum and Gilbert Burns are just not the same. Will it be a talented fight? Yes. Yes, it'll be a talented fight. But in terms of the best non-pay-per-view fight, absolutely not. UFC Paris is going to be delivering. Unless we consider UFC Paris a pay-per-view. And it's all right. And that was the final real or not that they decided to pose for me. So let me know what you guys think. I'm always curious to hear what the listeners think, what the other UFC the rest of the UFC community thinks about these things. But certainly for me, I am going to, you know, I'm going to ride with the other fights in that one. So some things are real, some things aren't real. I guess it all comes down to what we believe in our mind. yell. Which I hope that's not annoying. I wonder what the yell sound is. You know what? That's something else I need to get. Should I wear headphones when I record? I don't wear headphones when I record, so I can't really hear myself just because I'm always preoccupied doing other things. So maybe that's something I need to upgrade on. But in other words, getting back to podcast-related stuff for this episode. If no one knows, this is a new staple of the show, and I mean just something in general that I elected to do, and I'm probably going to be doing again every single year that we do this, is we give predictions at the start of the year about who we think will end the year as a UFC champion. And as we are now under 4 months left, I mean, I can count on probably my hands how many UFC events we're going to be doing the rest of the year. What are we getting? 3 in September, maybe 4 October, maybe 3 November, 2 in December. So it's winding down to the end. I give predictions for all 11 weight classes. So we're going to revisit those, see how our predictions are doing, and just kind of assess if we had a hit or miss when it came to our predictions. So first off, our favorite weight class that we've have in the UFC, the women's strawweight division. Oh, we love the women's strawweight division. Not really right now. Zhang Weili is not being an active champion. Okay, I would really love to see her fight Tatiana Suarez at some point, but I guess not. Zhang Weili was the champion, you know, heading into 2024, and I predicted she would end the year as champion so far. She's had one title defense against Yan Cheonan. Pretty dominant performance, and, you know, looking through UFC 307, 308, she could potentially get a fight in November or December, but as of right now, I think she's going to be landing on the still champion list by the end of the year, on December 31st. Now, I said the biggest rise would be Lupi Godinez. You know, I should have wrote down where she started at the start of the year, but she was doing pretty good, picked up a big win, but as of late, I would not say she has not won this year. She is 0-2 this year. Split decision loss to Virna Jandiroba and a unanimous decision loss to Mackenzie Dern. Wow. Okay, so no, we have completely missed on that one. Now, I did say the biggest fall-off would be Carla Esparza, and as of right now, Carla Esparza isn't even in the UFC rankings as actually having a retirement fight. So I don't know if we really nailed this one, per se. When we get to the end of the year, I'm going to touch more on which fighters actually had the biggest rise and fall-off. But Carla Esparza no longer in the rankings. Lupi Godinez, I don't know. She doesn't really feel like she's had the biggest rise. So, yeah, I'm going to say we've missed on probably those. But for Zhang Weili, I think we've pretty much nailed that one. Men's flyweight. We said champion on December 31st would be Alexander Pantoja. It's looking like that's going to be the case. Alexander Pantoja has just been so good this year. So, so good. Great performance over Steve Ersig, you know, at UFC 301. So, Pantoja, who's ever in his way, he's probably crushing. Biggest rise, we said Tetsuro Taira. Bam. We've absolutely freaking nailed this. I was about to drop the F-bomb just because we've nailed it so well. Tetsuro Taira was on no one's radar. Was on absolutely no one's radar coming into this year. Now, 16-0, beat Alex Perez, already has a fight with Brandon Royval for a title shot, potentially. Tetsuro Taira, absolute legend. Love him. Biggest fall-off, we've said Matthias Nicolau, currently ranked 7th. He was knocked out by Alex Perez, so that could potentially be the case. Biggest fall-off is probably looking to be Muhammad Moikaev, who, despite being undefeated, was cut from the UFC. We'll talk about that later on in the year. But I'm pretty happy with Tetsuro Taira being the biggest rise. I think we nailed him. Women's flyweight, I said Erin Blanchfield will be champion by year end. Talk about a miss there. I do see there's not a small world. I was going to say that maybe there's a scenario where she steps on short notice, but that's probably not going to happen. Looks like it's going to be Alexa Grasso or Valentina Shevchenko. We're going off of what I just said about UFC Noche. I would probably go with Alexa Grasso to win there. Erin Blanchfield, still ranked number 3. Her only loss is to Manon Fiorot. She's got a fight coming up with Rose Namajunas. But yeah, not really nailing that one. Biggest rise, I said Karine Silva. And, you know, Karine Silva, currently ranked number 11th in the women's flyweight division. And, you know, she's 18-4, currently on a 9-fight win streak. Only issue, she's only had one fight this year. We've had bigger rises. Natalia Silva has passed her, I would say. Rose Namajunas, you could even argue. So I can't really go with her. biggest fall off, we said Lauren Murphy, and we absolutely nailed this one because, you know, when I was looking at this, I was definitely looking at where were they at in the rankings, and Lauren Murphy is no longer in the UFC. So, I mean, definitely nailed that one. We definitely nailed the fall off of Lauren Murphy. Champion, though, did not nail this one. Same goes for women's bantamweight. I thought Mara Bueno Silva was going to beat Hakuel Pennington, and then I didn't even know Kayla Harrison was going to be signed to the UFC, so there's that. So we missed Mara Bueno Silva being the champion. Biggest rise, I said Norma Dumont. Now, Norma Dumont is currently ranked number 9, has a fight coming up with Irene Aldana. You know, currently doing pretty good, picked up a win over Jermaine Durandamy. I think we've almost nailed Norma Dumont. You know, she's had a good rise. If she beats Irene Aldana, she'd be in the top 5. But Kayla Harrison has joined the UFC, submitted Holly Holmes, and already has a fight for a title shot against Ketlen Vieira. So that's probably going to be her biggest rise. Biggest fall off, we said Holly Holmes. She's currently ranked number 7th, and she was submitted by Kayla Harrison. Doesn't even have another fight booked. So she could be in the running, but at the same time, Mara Bueno Silva having a bigger fall off would probably be the case. Going to our men's bantamweight division, this is interesting. This one's very interesting. Okay, so we said Sean O'Malley, all right? And I truly believe Sean O'Malley is still going to be champion. So nailed that one. Biggest rise, we said Umar Nurmagomedov, currently ranked number 2 at the start of the year. You know, Umar was outside of the top 15, all right? He was nowhere on the radar. He was put in just to put him in, okay? Now he's 18-0. He's gone 2-0 this year, right? Went over Belzad, Almakan, and Corey Sandhagen. I think we've nailed that. He's promised the next title shot. He's going to have the biggest rise of the year. I am very, very thrilled with that prediction. So absolutely nailed that. Biggest fall-off, okay? We said Rob Font. Rob Font is only 0-1 this year, lost to Devson Figueiredo, doesn't have another fight booked, so I don't know if we can really say Rob Font. Now, as I browse the rankings, I mean, Henry Cejudo lost this year, but Marlon Vera going from getting a title shot to now being 1-3 in his last 4 fights, yeah, I think it might be Marlon Vera. You could even argue Jonathan Martinez has had a little fall off, but Umar Nurmagomedov, we nailed him as having the biggest rise. Featherweight, it's crazy to think Ian Topuria wasn't the champion at the start of the year. I nailed that he would not only win, but still be champion. You know, Max Holloway could obviously sneak in there, steal that belt, but I'm still riding with El Matador, Ian Topuria. Crazy that he wasn't champion, so we nailed him becoming the new champion, which I always love to do. We said Mustafa Havlov would have the biggest rise. He's currently ranked number 6. Which makes absolutely no sense, might I add, because he beat Arnold Allen, and they just aren't putting him there. They're disrespecting Mustafa Allen just because he's a decision man, if you will call him that. Does have a fight coming up with Aljamain Sterling for a potential title shot. We should put some respect on his name. I said biggest fall off would be Brian Ortega. He proved me wrong by beating Yair Rodriguez, but you know, we'll see how he does against Diego Lopez. So I don't really know if that's going to be the case. As for other fall-offs, Calvin Kattar has been falling off, so there's that. Yeah, Rodriguez seems like he's kind of fallen off. You could even argue for biggest rise that Max Holloway has just reacclimated himself to the throne. So it's really tough to say, but nailing Ian Topuria is probably the biggest highlight I'll point out. Lightweight, we said Islam Makhachev. Yeah, Islam Makhachev. No one's beating this guy. I kid you not, no one is beating this guy. I said biggest rise would be Benoit Saint-Denis. My boy Benoit has sadly only had one fight. It was knocked out by Dustin Poirier. Funny enough, we said Dustin Poirier would have the biggest fall off this year. So, because I thought Benoit would beat him, which, oh my gosh, he was so close to beating him in March. But yeah, Dustin Poirier is the ranked number 4. But Dan Hooker right now, getting back into the top 5, looking like he might take that. We'll have to see later towards the year. Benoit taking on number 11 right now. Mike Connell coming up. So, yeah, kind of missed on both of those, but, you know, Islam winning. We'll ride with that. All right, welterweight. This one, guys, welterweight. Never even thought of Bilal. Bilal was not on my radar, but I did say on, you know, December 31st, Shavkat Rakhmonov would be champion. He's had to fight this year. I'm hoping we can squeeze him in December. We might get a buzzer-beater Shavkat win, but I'm still riding with that. As my prediction. We said Jack Della Maddalena would have the biggest rise. He's ranked number 4. I absolutely love it. So we've pretty much nailed that one. As for Falloff, I said Colby Covington. I'm going to have to get a Colby Covington fight. So hopefully Ian Garry can swipe in, fight him before year's end, and we can actually label him a Falloff. There's even more Charles Oliveira maybe fighting him. I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen there, but no Colby Covington fight so far. Middleweight, we said Driscoll Duplessis. Yeah. Yeah. He's ending year as champion. He's not fighting again this year. 2-0. Beats Sean Strickland. Finishes as a lasagna. I love DDP. And I knew he'd do it. Biggest rise, we said Kyle Barallo. The fact that I called that. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? I didn't even know I put that there. Kyle Barallo from unranked to the number 5 middleweight in the world. Yeah. Yeah, he's freaking beautiful. And as always, we said Robert Whitaker would have the biggest fall off. And lo and behold, that man is still kicking butt. 2-0 this year. Who knows if he's getting a title shot next. He's an absolute beauty. You could also throw Nazarene Imavov up there. Brennan Allen even. But the biggest fall off is probably Jared Cannonier. 0-2. Even Paulo Costa 0-2 this year. So Paulo Costa, Jared Cannonier, both having big fall-offs. I'd even throw Khamzat Chimaev up there for biggest fall-off for the fact that he keeps pulling out of fights. But yeah, we've had some rises, we've had some fall-offs, but I think Kyle Barallo, very happy with that prediction. Light heavyweight, man, we said Magomed Ankalaev, and he didn't get a freaking shot. He didn't even get a freaking shot, so we're going to miss on that one. There's just no, it's impossible. It's impossible for Magomed to win the belt. Alex Pereira is not going to fight again in December, so we're going to have to take the L there. Biggest rise, I said Carlos Ulberg, which we almost nailed. He's ranked number 10 currently. He had a fight with Jamal Hill, but it is no longer taking place. So hopefully we can get Carlos Ulberg, you know, maybe one last fight before year's end, but look like we might miss there. And I said biggest fall off, Anthony Smith. I'm going to say he proved me wrong. He submitted Vitor Petrino. Only lost his men to Roman Dolidze, so we kind of missed there. Heavyweights, John Jones, I said, would still be champion. And honestly, he is going to be champion. He is going to be champion. But is he the real champion? No, 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 he is not. It's Tom Aspinall. It is so Tom Aspinall. So John Jones, whether he actually fights Stipe or not, will still be champion. Biggest rise, I said, was Shamil Gaziev, because I thought he was going to beat Jarzynka Rozenstruik. Absolutely not. Shamil Gaziev is absolutely a bum. I thought he was going to be insane. I guess not. Biggest fall-off, we said Stipe Miocic, and I just kind of want to add that he is ranked number 8 in the UFC, and they're talking about giving him a title shot. So that should speak for something for you. There have been actually a couple fall-offs this year, but as in terms of rises, look, it's going to be Tom Aspinall. Okay, Tom Aspinall is a generational talent, and it's a matter of time before he gets his hands on the undisputed heavyweight champion. And I mean, you know, when we're talking about fall-offs, I think Ty Tuivasa's a name we'll throw out right now. Obviously, we're going to do an end-of-the-year recap show, which is, gosh, going to be so much. We always do so much to end out the UFC year, but we've nailed some things, we've missed on some things. I'm very happy with my Kyle Barallo pick, Ilia Topuria, Justus Duplessis, Umar Nurmagomedov. Honestly, guys, pat on the back to myself. I've nailed some of these. Tell you something else that I have nailed, and that has been watching some hit movies. That's right, I've seen 2 movies that came out this year, and I'm going to add them to when I, at the end of the year, we always do the top 10 movies we saw in 2024. Will these movies be up there? I'll have to see, but both of these are interesting. So first off, the movie I'm going to give a review on is The Bike Rider, starring Jodie Comer, I'm so sorry, whatever your name is, Austin Butler and Tom Hardy, and before both of these, I am going to say spoiler warning for The Bike Riders, as I kind of want to go in on everything that happens, because I do have my thoughts. So, movie was alright, you know, also had Michael Shannon, Mike Fass, Norman Reedus, Norman Reedus was in this film, 160 minutes long, the budget was 30 to 40 million, at the box office, it made 35.8, so might have just made its budget back. This film was okay. You know, the whole premise of it was very odd. I don't think this movie knew what it was. I genuinely don't believe that this movie knew what it was. And the main issue, I will say, is that it's just average. It's just an average movie. And in the film, you know, you got Jodie Comer and Austin Butler, and then they have a little relationship, and he's part of a biking gang, And then it's like the movie is being told through her. And I'll be honest, this is just preference. Her voice got a little annoying throughout the film, I'll say. No offense to Comer, I'm sure it was your character. But, you know, her and Oz's mother have this relationship. And I think, like, the whole theme of this film was, like, showing emotion or something. Because the whole film, they're talking about Austin Butler. His character never cries. When his dad died, he didn't even react. Then at the end of the movie, someone dies. We'll talk about that in a second. And he finally cries to her. But it was also like he disappeared for a year. And when he came back, he was just sitting on our front porch. And then he started crying. It was very odd. And, you know, this whole biker gang is led by Tom Hardy, who saw an ad on TV and decided to start a biking gang. And then he basically talks about how he's a family man. He has two kids and this, and then he's going out fighting people. You know, he burns down a bar. You know, I just don't think they knew what to do with his character personally. And then they also had this random angle there. Remember the movie? What was the Jesus movie I talked about? It was on Netflix. It basically documented, the revival that happened. Oh my gosh. I can't remember. Remember what it was called? What was it? Finding Jesus. Jesus saves, who knows? But in the film, they basically talk about how there's a news reporter, like a reporter doing like a story on everything that's taking place. And then this, you have a reporter who's like taking pictures, he's interviewing the people. And it's like, that's what the movie's told through. But at the same time, they do scenes where he's not there. It was very, very odd. And you then have this one random character who, honestly, the antagonist of this film ended up just being this random kid who got curved by Tom Hardy, who's the leader of the biker gang, for not wanting to join, which is a very reasonable reason. He then attacks Tom Hardy, and then Tom Hardy says, go away. He comes back like a year later with his own little gang, says, I want to challenge you, you know, and when you challenge someone, you fight them with either fists or knives. Fist means you just fight to submission. Knives mean you fight to the death. And they meet in this parking lot, and, you know, Tom Hardy walks up to fight him, and the guy just walks up and shoots him. And Tom Hardy dies. And that's that. And he's like, hey, I'm taking over. And the movie honestly ends. It ends with, Austin Butler's character crying over the death of Tom Hardy. Him and Jodie Comer moved down to Florida to live out their lives. And the bad guy takes over the biker gang. And the biker gang falls into just oblivion. So it was actually a very, very bland ending, you know. I think first act build up, second act was getting good, third act did not stick the landing. And in terms of sticking the landing, I mean, like I said, this movie didn't know what it was. It's going to get a 6.9 out of 10. It's not good enough to be a 6 out of 10. It's not good enough to be a 7 out of 10. So, The Bike Riders, that's my official rating for it. Another movie that I saw, this one was weird, guys, all right? I want to talk about this movie. First off, praise Jesus. Praise Jesus. Praise God. Because I watched Long Legs. Okay, and I watched Long Legs. You know, of course, the movie, serial killer Nicolas Cage. And the weirdest thing about watching this movie is I can't recall what day this was on. I honestly cannot recall what day it was on. It might have been on Wednesday, I want to say. Maybe it was a Tuesday. And I had a dream I watched the movie or, like, was in the movie. And it was just a very weird dream. Some weird things went on. And I woke up and I was like, huh, I never actually watched that. And at 7:30 in the freaking morning, I ended up watching Long Legs in my room, like the full 2-hour movie. And it was just a weird experience. You know, I don't really like to use the word like demonic or anything, but it was just kind of weird. Like I was like called to watch it. And I won't lie. Okay, I won't lie. It is technically labeled a horror thriller film. And it's kind of like The Bike Riders, all right? It's kind of like The Bike Riders. First act good, second act good. Dude, it does not stick the third landing. It stars Micah Monroe. She's amazing lead in this. Micah Monroe. Blair Underwood's also in it. You also have Alicia White and Nicolas Cage. So you have a very short cast for this film. The marketing behind this was absolutely amazing. Now, budget-wise, under $10 million budget, $102 million at the box office, so obviously made a lot of money, but of course, spoiler warning for this, we're building up Nicolas Cage as a serial killer. Okay, he's a serial killer in this film, and, you know, he's doing these crazy things. He's a super weird character, like, just his movements are unnatural. It's very eerie and weird. There's a couple scenes where, you know, it's more of like what you can't see, like, you know, that suspense. I think the suspense is what it is at the end of the day. But other than that, you know, the whole premise is that Nicolas Cage is a doll maker. He's putting this, like, sphere-looking ball, which is a demonic spirit, into these dolls. And then he's leaving them at the people's houses, and when they open the doll, it infects them with demons, and the dad kills the whole family and then kills himself. That's actually the third act. And when I found that out, I was like, you're kidding me. And Nicolas Cage, his serial killer, Long Legs, we never even really learn what Long Legs even means. Like, that was generally blasphemy to me. And he kills himself by bashing his head on a table when he's being interviewed. And it was like, okay, so he's dead. And then the big reveal, the big plot twist, is that Mike Monroe, who's this detective, her mom is the one actually bringing the dolls to the frickin' places, because she ran into Nicolas Cage, who I think at the time was an actual serial killer or something, or like he was a rapist. And he had her tied up, and she made a deal with him that if she did this for him, he would spare her daughter. And that was the whole premise. And, you know, he lived, like, in their basement or something. It was, I have no idea. It was really weird. It was just like, it was like the plot twist, they made sense. Like, they were able to correlate where it's like, oh, that doesn't cross over well. But then it was also like, that's the twist. Like, that's the twist. That's what I've been waiting for this whole time. And, you know, obviously, like, the devil's real, demons are real, all that's real. Like, don't think that's not real. But, you know, obviously, God and Jesus win in the end. But it was also like that doesn't even make sense. Like, I wanted him to be an actual serial killer, and I wanted to find out why he was doing it and how he was doing it. It just came down to the fact that he worships the devil, and he's commanding spirits in the devil's name. Like, it was so dumb. Like, I literally watched it, and I was like, damn, I'm glad I did not go to the theater. Because I was really tempted to go see this movie at the theater. I don't want my money. I'd definitely want my money back. So I almost want redemption. I want a good serial killer movie. So if anyone has serial killer movies to recommend me, let me know, because I actually want to watch a good one now. But yeah, Nicolas Cage also said he's never going to be acting as a serial killer again. He just said it's not for him. He prefers love and peace, which actually I rock with that, Nicolas Cage. So Long Legs, it's going to get a 6.5 out of 10. It's going to get a 6.5 out of 10. So average. There's a couple of weird scenes, but it was all Nicolas Cage. It was all him actually doing good acting, if you will. And it was just, it was so dumb. And then this police chief, he was in this, and then he ends up becoming infected and, like, kills his family. And that was kind of like, that's so unnecessary. And then you had, like, oh, there's a lot of symbolism in this film. I don't know. Just another film that, yeah, I felt this film knew what it wanted to be and then completely threw it away in the third act, so. Bike Riders, Long Legs, two hit movies of the year, kind of on the same coin. You know, when you can't stick the landing, the plane's going to crash and everyone with it is going to crash too. So there you have that. But let's stop talking about mediocre movies. Let's talk about some new things in pop culture. All right, we all love ourselves a little pop culture action. So let's get into it. We recently have had a new poster announced for Agatha All Along, premiering on Disney Plus September 18th. Let's do a, what thing should I do? Awkward? An awkward sound effect? Because I'll be honest, Agatha All Along does not pique my interest. Does not pique my interest in the slightest. It's so unnecessary. It's actually painful. And, like, no one asked for this. I think that's the crazy thing. It's like, people are asking for shows, and then they make this show, which no one is, like, asking for. And it's about a villain who no one really cared about. You know, and this was during COVID. We had nothing to watch. She became catchy because it's been Agatha all along. You know, the theme song, it's been Agatha all along. Music. It just played music. I don't even know what the sound bar, but Agatha all along, no interest in you. Number two, Donald Trump and his team have decided to walk away from pursuing legal action with the makers of the Trump biopic, The Apprentice, hoping it just fades away. Coming out soon, starring Sebastian Stan as a young Donald Trump. I don't know if it's going to go away. I'm sure the Democrats and CNN are going to cover and promote the absolute heck out of that. But I do find it pretty fascinating they're releasing a Trump biopic about, like, him being evil on The Apprentice around election time. And that's just something interesting I find. Will I be watching it? Probably not. I also don't have Hulu or whatever it's coming out on. I don't really know. Vincent D'Onofrio says he has always wanted to play Swamp Thing in the comic book movie. I love Vincent D'Onofrio. Currently plays Kingpin in the MCU. And honestly, you slap a bunch of makeup on him, he would body Swamp Thing as a villain or whatever he is in the film. So very much happy with that. I'm interested to see his performance in the Daredevil series. I might have to check that out. Number three, Glenn Powell says he wants to build trust with the audience that I'm going to work my butt off to make sure they're entertained. When they show up and pay their $15 for a ticket, and they'll at least be able to say, I know that this dude is going to try to deliver quality. He's going to summon every bit of himself to try to deliver quality. No, that's awesome. Thank you for that, Glenn Powell. And I think Glenn Powell does a great job of that. I think he's accepted the role that Hollywood's giving him. And certainly in all of his films, you know, he's unfortunately getting to a point where it's Glenn Powell. You know, it's Glenn Powell and Sidney Sweeney. It's Glenn Powell in a movie about tornadoes. So maybe he has to try and break that away. But I do think he's taken over. And he is credited as one of the better actors in today's era, if you want to say that. Number four, what's one we should do? 15 years ago, Disney announced they were acquiring Marvel. Has Disney improved Marvel? That's the question. I don't think so. It's brought more publicity, more money to them, but has actually benefited, like, in quality? Absolutely not. I mean, that's just my opinion, but you could all have your own opinion. Number five, Robert Pattinson's Batman will not appear in The Penguin. Matt's films are through the lens of the Batman, so you're high up looking down on the city. With Oz, you're in the city streets, you're in the grit. It's a different experience. No real interest in The Penguin, but I do like the actor who's playing him. I can't remember what his name is, but he's super good. Number six, behind the scenes of the final monster in Alien Romulus. Oh my gosh, the final monster in Alien Romulus. No one has seen it. It's played by this kid who was like, he's 7'7", very skinny. He is a basketball player, and they put him in full body makeup for this, and he looks absolutely terrifying in the film as this like decrepit creature. So very, very good credit to that. Very happy to see that. Probably on DVD whenever it comes out. Not DVD, virtual. Number seven, John Stamos says he got kicked out of Scientology after his first meeting as a teenager. You're holding these two cans, so I started, you know, Hello Peabody and the Wayback Machine. You know, Sherman and Peabody, they didn't like that. I have no idea what he's talking about, but I'm so glad John Stamos is not a part of Scientology, because Scientology is evil. We've actually broken that down on the Surprise Chef podcast, so you guys can go find that episode and check it out, because it is absolutely amazing. How about some cheers? How about some cheers for going to check that out on the Surprise Chef podcast? Number seven, George R. R. Martin plans to write a blog post about everything that went wrong with House of the Dragon. I do not look forward to other posts I need to write about everything that's gone wrong with House of the Dragon, but I do need to do that too, and I will. How about this, George R. R. Martin, all right, with our seventh of our top 10 pop culture new news, I'm gonna use it to say, hey, George, how about you finish the damn freaking book, okay? I've been waiting 5 years now, 5 years for this book. Still not here, and there've been other people waiting over a decade for this book. Finish the sixth book in your damn franchise, and I can sleep peacefully at night. Unreal. Unreal, George. Number eight, major blockbusters releasing in July of next summer. Jurassic World Rebirth. I forgot to mention, they're calling the new film Jurassic World Rebirth. I don't know if the plot synopsis is correct, but it's taking place in the same universe. It's not an actual reboot. It's like rebooting different characters, but it's in the same Jurassic World universe. Very interesting. Superman coming out July 11th. A new Superman film. Interesting. And the Fantastic Four coming out July 25th. I actually kind of want to see that Fantastic Four film. It's actually looking pretty good. They've been doing pretty good, keeping me intrigued in it. Number nine, Warner Brothers Animation reportedly has a huge plan for Looney Tunes that will begin to roll out in 2028. Wow, thank you. In 4 years, I'll be able to see what this Looney Tunes plan is. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? Unreal. Absolutely unreal. Number 10. What's the number 10 thing we should go with? A live-action Invincible movie is still in the works. Well, I do love Invincible. I love me a little Mark Grayson. You know, I love Omni-Man. I love Ellen. I love that show, of course, on Amazon Prime. One of the only animated shows I watch. How about we finish the animated show? Okay, how about we do that instead of going to a live-action movie? I swear these studios, they just want to keep making random things without even finishing things they've started. So if we could do that, then I'd also sleep peacefully at night, because I have to wait 2 years in between every season. I lose all my hype. Then it all comes back in the final bit, but I have no freaking idea, guys. So that's all your new things in pop culture. A couple things here, a couple things there. I'll tell you one thing that I'm very excited to get into, and that is a recap of WWE Bash in Berlin. The premium live event went down yesterday, August 30th. August 30th, I believe it was. Maybe it wasn't the 31st. I think it was the 31st, actually. So August 31st went down. I was able to catch all of the matchups, and I have some thoughts on all of them and what could be next for all of the wrestlers. So under this new era of Triple H taking over the WWE from Vince McMahon, we now get five matches on every professional premium live event, it's actually called. And this new format has been very interesting. It's been good, but one thing you can expect from almost every matchup now is that it's going to be at least 10 minutes long, and that was certainly the case for this episode. So as we kick things off, with Cody Rhodes defending his undisputed WWE Championship against Kevin Owens. And the crowd was absolutely electric for this matchup. This Berlin crowd, one of the best crowds I've ever watched. And honestly, it's the crowds that make these WWE events interesting to watch. And as a WWE fan, I want to see the intrigue in person as much as there's intrigue online. So certainly the crowd is what makes this event amazing as it was. And the storyline going in this is that Kevin Owens was, you know, Cody Rhodes' friend, and could he channel that inner, you know, fighter in him to take advantage of Cody Rhodes, who had knee injury, and to beat him? And this match went 23 minutes and 16 seconds. I do find it funny that your top guy is the one kicking off the show. You would think he'd be towards the end of the show, but no. Cody Rhodes, the man who may have entered WrestleMania, beat Roman Reigns, was kicking off this card in Berlin. Pretty comical. And it was an okay match, you know, kind of slow at times, sort of started to pick up. Ending, you know, not a terrible ending, but could have stuck it a bit better. I think when you have so many close falls that eventually when you get a three-count pinfall, the audience is kind of like, oh, that was that. Oh, okay, let's cheer. So there was that. And I was really hoping we'd get a Kevin Owens pinfall. I was really aiming for, not pinfall, heel turn. We did not get a Kevin Owens heel turn, so it's looking like it's going to be Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa now. Michael Cole was on commentary kind of teasing that. Those two competing at Bad Blood in a Hell in a Cell match, potentially. So Cody Rhodes will definitely be the main event of the next PLE, but as for Kevin Owens, I don't know what to do with him next, personally. After that, we had a WWE Women's Tag Team Championship match between the Unholy Union of Alba Fire and Isla Dawn taking on Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill in a title defense. This match went 12 minutes and 2 seconds, and Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill won. And certainly something for this matchup is there was no real interest. Okay, there's no real interest. They had to earn the audience's approval. And Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair, two of the best workers in the business in terms of women, even just wrestlers in general. And they sold the show, they won the belts, but I was really surprised that they not only retained, but there wasn't, not only won the belts, I'm surprised only Union didn't retain, but I'm surprised Jade Cargill did not turn heel. They're still building that up, and if anything, this just kind of keeps the women's division stagnant. You know, these women's tag team championship belts are already kind of just iffy. So yeah, this match was there, it was okay, it was entertaining. I think being entertaining was the only good thing about this matchup, because other than that, the audience was kind of iffy on it. After that, we got to our third match of the evening as CM Punk took on Drew McIntyre in a strap match. And the strap match, the entire premise of a strap match is that two opponents are tied together by the wrists, just one wrist, to a strap, like almost like a belt, if you will. And for this specific strap match, you had to touch all four corners of the ring posts, like simultaneously, uninterrupted, to win the matchup. And oddly enough, you know, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. This was probably the best match of the entire night. The crowd was absolutely involved in this one. The storytelling was on point. You had great spots with the table. CM Punk fighting to win his bracelet back. It was super interesting. And I'm sure, this was pretty predictable. Let's say the one thing that WWE had going against them this whole event was how predictable it was. They had a bit of an unpredictability with some things, but other than that, everything was predictable. And one good thing about this is it was predictable, but it delivered. And CM Punk wins, which means we'll get one more fight in this whole trilogy of matchups. But yeah, great wrestling all around. I wasn't able to really watch it in full due to the fact that I was actually kind of talking with my friends at the time. But yeah, 19 minutes, 15 seconds, perfect amount. This was good. Great feud between these two. We then got to our second to last matchup of the night as the Terror Twins, Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley, took on the Judgment Day, Dirty Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan, of course, your women's champion in the WWE. Damian Priest, former World Heavyweight Champion, Rhea Ripley, rival of Liv Morgan, Dirty Dominic Mysterio, breaking apart the Judgment Day by siding with Liv Morgan and kicking Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley out. 14 minutes and 20 seconds of this. It was entertaining. All right, this match delivered on all aspects, and I was actually kind of surprised Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley won. You know, they finally let them get their moment after kind of getting their butts kicked at SummerSlam. So that was interesting. You also had Finn Balor and JD McDonagh coming into the fray, you know, interrupting things, breaking up pinfalls. But no, Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley handling business. There was actually a really funny scene where Damian Priest absolutely threw JD McDonagh, like, over the announce table, and I was like, oh my gosh, he really sold that well. But yeah, pretty good overall. Probably get like 3.5 stars or something. The feuds wage on. I think they're still building up Damian Priest versus Finn Balor. And then, of course, Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley. You know, here's the issue with Bad Blood going down in a month, October 5th, in Atlanta, Georgia. The main event's going to be Cody Rhodes. Okay, and Cody Rhodes or Sol Tico, I would love to see that in Hell in a Cell. CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, I want to see that in Hell in a Cell. Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan works for Hell in a Cell. I don't know how many Hell in a Cell matches you can have when there's only 5 matches on a card. They could do, you know, Hell in a Cell, normal match, Hell in a Cell, normal match, Hell in a Cell, if you do the 5-match format. But this, the feud's going on here, you know. Dominic Mysterio, he's going to be always in the fray with Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. He's probably going to be more of a side character. They might drag this out a bit more, but I really hope they start pushing that Damian Priest-Finn Balor feud, and we work towards getting a Hell in a Cell match between Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. But yet again, this was one of the better matches of the night. Probably the second or third best. Main event coming at you, Gunther, as it's called, Gunther, your World Heavyweight Champion, home nation of Germany, Berlin, defending his belt against the legend, the Viper, Randy Orton. And holy cow, guys, holy cow, 34 minutes and 28 seconds. I knew this match was long, but man, it was good. There's also a stipulation I didn't realize that had Orton won the championship, he would have been transferred to Raw, and Gunther would have been transferred to SmackDown. I didn't even know that, but yeah, very good match, kind of slower paced, technical wrestling, good selling. The crowd was absolutely electric for this one. You even had Ludwig Kaiser introducing Gunther. This was phenomenal. Absolutely loved this. And like I said, a bit slower at times, but as a traditional wrestling fan, I was able to get behind that. And, you know, I will say the one downfall is that Gunther's finisher of being a submission is not interesting. You know, it's not interesting, you know, having like a Samoa, it's not even like a Samoa Joe one. When Samoa Joe had you in a chokehold, he was holding you up in the air, choking you out. You know, you had Alberto Del Rio with the armbar, Bret Hart with the, he had his submission, you had Ric Flair with the figure four lock. You've had some guys with really good submissions. Chris Jericho was a good one. Rusev had a good one for a time. But this one's just very, you know, it's rear naked chokehold that doesn't look that tight. And the finish was pretty drawn out. It's like Randy Orton kept reversing. Oh, he's caught. Kept reversing, getting caught. I know what they're doing with Gunther. They're building him up. But now I legit don't know where do we go from here. I don't even know. Gunther could feud with an unlimited amount of people on Monday Night Raw. Orton, I don't know what angle you do with him on SmackDown, but you know, this was a good match. It was a filler match, you know, it was a filler feud for Gunther, but it builds him up as this impressive beast who can never lose. So we'll give credit where it's due. Credit where it's due. Good job to Gunther, and he capped this off well. So in terms of all the people in this match, this card, what is next for all them? You know, Cody Rhodes, like I said, main event, Bad Blood against Sol Sikoa might be. Kevin Owens, I don't know. I think we're building up Kevin Owens and Randy Orton to both have heel turns. In terms of Owens and Orton, you know, I think they might just continue to feud with the Bloodline. Maybe they feud with each other. I have no idea. Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, I guess they're going to wait on them breaking up. I'm sure there's other women's tag teams that feud with. Unholy Union, Alba Fire, and Isla Dawn. Probably going to fade to non-existence. CM Punk and Drew McIntyre have one more match to finish off this feud. Then I think they're probably going to go their separate ways. Like I said, Damian Priest and Finn Balor should be the next move, and Dominic Mysterio can play background to Rhea Ripley versus Liv Morgan. Gunther on Monday Night Raw. This is tough. I really don't know who Gunther should fight. G-U-N-T-H-E-R. Is that Gunther or Gunther? Let me know, because some pronounce it Gunther, some pronounce it Gunther. I'm really torn. You know, as I look through the roster, you know, you got what's his face? Who's feuding with Braun Strowman? Bronson Reed. They got, you know, Jey Uso and Pete Dunne. They're all doing things in the Intercontinental Championship division. Maybe you try to do a little Sheamus, action for the World Heavyweight Championship, but we got only three events left, three premium live events left for the year. We go October 5th to Bad Blood, Atlanta, Georgia. We then go November 2nd to Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia, and then we go November 28th to Survivor Series for Survivor Series War Games, which I think is in, gosh, where's that taking place? Las Vegas, Dallas, big stadium. I think it might be in Los Angeles, maybe even. So, fun stuff ahead. WWE is red hot right now in Bash in Berlin. It's a good event overall, but, you know, looking back at the other ones, it's a filler event. It's sadly a filler event, but even the filler events you can find good. So, there's that. But, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for today's episode, a jam-packed episode. Holy cow, we went over so many things. But it's fun going over things. You know, we always have a great time, don't we, guys? Come on, give a round of applause for yourselves. Here we go. A round of applause. How about that? I'm still learning this. I might try and use my group. What is it? A headset or something to hear myself. But, yeah, we're trying to upgrade the podcast, working on getting more guests. It's tough. You know, I'm not the most technical person when it comes to computers and stuff, so I'm learning this all on my own, trying to Google things. It's a fun process. Very fun process. So, guys, we'll be back this week. Of course, we got UFC Vegas 97, so we'll be dropping a prediction show for you, coming at you later this week. But as for now, we'll close out episode 117 with a big thank you. Enjoy your Labor Day, guys. You can listen to this on Labor Day. And as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Should I end with something? Should we end from now on? I don't know what this does, but on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Boom. Okay, we're never ending like that again. Have a good week, everyone.